Okay, welcome back to the Pass is Brian podcast. Zach's here, Mike's working the board, and of course, yours truly. So, I could talk about the NCAA tournament, the men's part. I kind of, my brackets were busted very early. I got one team right, UConn going all the way and winning it. For the women's tournament, though, I got three out of the four final four teams and picked South Carolina to beat Iowa in the finals. I did very, very well with the women's, and I actually watched the whole women's game. I didn't watch many of them. I watched the little dribs and drabs of the men's tournament and even the final, you know, of the men's UConn against Purdue, but I watched the entire South Carolina-Iowa final. And it was a really interesting game. It was a good game. And, you know, I feel bad that Caitlin Clark didn't win, but I did pick South Carolina.
Winning, right?
What's that?
You said you called it.
I did.
Winning,
I called South Carolina to win the thing. They were great, undefeated this year. They were only lost one last year, and Caitlin Clark's Iowa team beat them, and then they lost to LSU. But they had over 18 million viewers. So I guess all our podcast listeners just decided, hey, he's doing well in the tournament. You know, let's just go and root him on and do well. So our 18 million followers went, which was great, I thought.
That's really good.
I think it really is an interesting thing that all our followers went to watch that game. So we are picking up steam, as I say all the time. This podcast is really picking up momentum. We're like the little engine that could here. So that was, did you watch any of it, Zach? Did you watch a little bit?
I did. I mean, I it was one of those things that just became kind of inescapable, where you could not know something was going on.
It was kind of neat.
I didn't.
No, you're not going to sit. Mike, did you catch a little bit?
Yeah, I watched like every Elite Eight game going all the way to the
finals. Isn't that funny?
So
I mean, you know.
You did call LSU rematch with them early on, too.
Right. I called that. I was really rolling on that. But, you know, I didn't enter a contest because I figured as soon as I enter, like I did with the men's, I had some confidence in the men's and I got blown out. Because, you know, the thing is, you can't listen to the experts when you do these things.
No.
Because if you follow the experts, because everybody when you watch it is an expert. So you listen, oh, that's okay, this team, they know this team. You got to just kind of go by the seat of your pants and go, you know what, what's the mascot of this team or where are they from or do I like somebody, you know, that I have a friend that went to this school or whatever. But but it was fun. It was exciting and it was takes you right into the Masters now. Because the Masters tournament starts this Thursday.
Just before that, was your bracket for the female, the women's game, was that like not what all the experts were picking? Or
no, I went basically when they say chalk, I went one seed. I had UConn was a 3 seed, but
so if you bet, you wouldn't have gotten a whole.
I mean, you know, and of course there were some upsets too in there because I had Notre Dame going further than what they were going to go, and they always pick Notre Dame, and they, you know, their basketball team, women's basketball team, is better than the men's team. The men's team didn't even sniff the tournament, so they're always really, really good at make the tournament and win a few rounds. But all in all, it was exciting because I didn't watch a lot of college basketball this year at all. Mm. And then to get into it, like I saw some Iowa games, you know, here and there, like a half a one or, you know, like, you know, but it was interesting. I'm glad the tournament, you know, our followers followed it. And they at one point, they had over 21 million fans watching the tournament at one point. This is like NFL numbers they got. Because wow. 18, they're going to be like in the top like 50 of television shows or whatever during by the year end. In the top, like maybe 50 or whatever, which is great for women's sports, and because they outdrew the men, that's for sure.
Mm. Well, that's really cool.
Yeah, it really did well. Now, will that translate to the WNBA when she goes to the first pick? I believe she's going to the Indiana. I don't know the name of the Indiana Storm. It's some, I can't remember the name, but she'll be the number one pick, Caitlin Clark. So we'll have to see if that translates. But she will be on TV a lot because she will bring eyes to the table because she's the it girl right now. And we'll see what happens. Well, woman, I shouldn't say girl, woman now. So we'll see what that does. But you got to figure, you know, there was the dominance of Tennessee Volunteers for a while. The UConn team for a while, you know, was winning every year and whatever. But they still didn't bring what this one woman Caitlin Clark did to this sport. Because it kind of moved men and women to watch. Because before you're like, yeah, okay, WNBA or, you know, not to put it down, but it wasn't getting the eyeballs and they're not making nearly the money the men make in playing basketball. But she really just kind of got the pro players into it, both the WNBA and NBA players, and she's going to do...
Who's the girl from LSU? Isn't she...
Angel Reese.
Yeah, she'll be drafted, but they're like, where will she... Now it's like, well, where will she go? Because they had, I believe it was Sue Bird and Diana Taurasi were doing like a Manning cast, and they're like, she's good now against, you know, it's like the same thing they would say about the men. You're 18, 19, 20 years old. You're coming into the league. Now you're going up against that are men or women that have been in the league for a few years. They know the game. They know the rigors. You're playing more games. You might be playing, you know, back-to-back or a couple of nights in the week. How's your body going to respond to that? Plus, you're going to be the media attention every city you go to. You're going to be looked at and go, oh, wow, this, you know, she's here. Wait till she comes to, like, to play the Liberty and... in the area here and or wherever LA Spark, you know, wherever she's going to go, she's going to be focused on and she's going to be the face. And of course, other players are going to say, okay, you were this badass in, you know, pardon my language, my badass in college. Now you're coming in to play against us. So right. Let's see what you've got, which is good. I mean, if she can play. I mean, there's no question that she can play. So we'll just see. And I think they want her to succeed. Obviously, they want to beat her, but if she draws eyeballs to it, if she gets more people involved in it, men and women going to the games, it's a great thing for the sport. It's like what Steph Curry did when he came into the NBA, taking these deep threes. You know, like he kind of now was like the Jordan of our, you know, he went from Jordan being what Jordan was to, hey, it doesn't matter. You don't have to be 6'8". Mm-hmm. Look at these shots this guy's making, mid-court, half-court. You know, three-quarter court, just bringing the three into it like she does. She's an incredible shooter and a great pass. She's an all-around basketball player. She's a really good basketball player. And she made everybody on her team better. She wasn't just like, okay, give me the ball, I got to score 60. Mm-hmm. She, you know, just that game, South Carolina was just a more dominant team, but they hadn't lost all year. I mean, you know, they've only lost like one game in 2 years, I think. They lost to Iowa in the semifinals last year. And they had won all their games. And then they won every game this year and beat Iowa in the finals to kind of get like a revenge, if you want to call it, you know. So, I mean, it's incredible what Dawn Staley's done there too. And this is the other thing I was thinking, and I don't know if you guys, well, sometimes I think things, I don't know if anybody else thinks what I think, but there's a lot of men that coach women's basketball teams. You know, like there's...
Yeah.
Like Gino Auriemma is a great coach. There's the, you know, there's great men coaches, but they're coaching women. I just would wonder, as great as some of the coaches there have been in college, in women's college basketball, that they couldn't coach a men's team. Like if your team is really bad, let's say like, you know, like some teams win one game, two games a year, they're horrible. Their program's horrible. But if you can get a great coach to come in, like Dawn Staley, like if a men's team was doing really badly, she's a great coach. She knows the game. She knows it as well as any men coach in the game. Obviously, she's only lost one game in 2 years. Would you think like kids would men would go to play for a woman coaching the team? Because there's money now too. There's NIL money that could draw you into it. Would that be like if I had a kid that wanted to play and, you know, I'd say, why not? Give it a shot. Or if I was a president of the university, hey, look, our team's doing bad with the men guys we've had here, so why not bring in a woman coach? Why not see what she can do? She knows the game. I mean, is it weird to think that? I don't even know why it's never done. Or even Gino Auriemma, with all the championships he won in the women's game, he can recruit, he gets the best players. You know, why wouldn't... Like a team say, not that there's anything wrong coaching the women. But men, I'm sure men coaches are making more money than the, you know, in college, you know, men's college basketball, and they are paying the women's coaches.
Well, I think it just, you know, kind of speaks to that. I think there's still a lot of
bias,
internalized stigma as to that. And, you know, maybe this is starting to defeat that.
Yeah, maybe. You know,
I mean, I certainly think that. I mean, I don't really follow this stuff, but I saw, I don't know her name, but the coach of that team, like, on everything. It was all over everything, that either YouTube or Facebook, that, you know.
You talk about the South Carolina coach, Dawn Staley?
The woman who won, right? Like, it's like, yeah, I saw that, like, right. You know, the president, the vice president, everyone.
Oh, yeah, they'll call.
Wrote
yeah,
something
absolutely.
About
yeah,
her,
yeah.
And then there
president
was...
President former President yeah, Obama, Obama did, yeah,
and
yeah,
then there
yeah.
was, you know, like, basically everyone, and, like, she's one of the winningest coaches. I mean, I guess it's
yeah, she's
extreme.
Great.
So, yeah, I mean...
No,
I think
since
the
she lost like what three games over three seasons.
Yeah, something
her
like
record is, like,
incredible
1-9
record.
And three.
Yeah, it's amazing. So I'm but just yes. saying, like, if you had, let's say, take any, you don't have to take Dawn Staley. Let's say you've got a woman that, you know what, she's young. I like the way she, with NIL money too, maybe bringing you in, because that's another big factor too. It's not just who's coaching. It's how much am I going to get to come here? Then kids don't. Care if it's a man or a woman to me. If I really want to succeed and build my program, get attention for it, but also bring in a coach that's good, mm-hmm. why not say, hey, you know what? We can't do any worse. Or take a program that's developed a little bit, but, you know, maybe the coach left to go to another team or whatever, you know, say, why not? Why not give it a chance? I mean, it's talent is talent. You can coach it. You can see it. You know what's there. So that, to me, would be something. I just... See that there's a lot of men that are coaching women, and it's just, to me, I was like, wow, you know what? Why? And I've thought about it before, but I was just like, why not? You know, give it a shot.
Yeah, it's stigma. I mean, they could. Dawn Staley could coach a team to
yeah,
a victory.
Yeah, she could. Yeah. I think she really could.
Yeah, I think, like Michael said, I think it's just...
I mean, there's a system. I mean, in football now, they're adding, like, some teams are hiring women to work with their teams. The Yankees had a minor league coach, you know, that's a, you know, it's a woman. I mean, you've got... You know, if you want to increase the base too, but if you know it, what's the difference? I don't care if you're a man or a woman. If you can communicate, which is the biggest thing to the kids now.
It's kind of, yeah. It's
because,
kind of,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
You know, it's just kind of weird that, you know, we think of coaching as gendered. It's like basically who can communicate and get to somebody and get them
right.
to do it is the best. Is, you know, like,
if you know what you're talking about and don't, like, she seems like, you know, she knows how to deal with personalities. You can't win that many games and not know how to deal with
certainly
men or women. Of course, there's some different problems that a woman could have that a man could have. I get that. But in general, they're still 18 to 22 to 23 years old. And if you command the respect and you're a winner, I don't care. You know, it's just so, to me, it's just strange that you can't get That somebody hasn't thought about that and said, hey, you know what, let's give it a try here. She's a good coach. And I'm not just saying her. I'm saying, like, you could pick. There's a lot of different, you know, coaches out there that are women that are good at their sports. But
I think it just comes down to, you know, now I think that a lot of it had come down to exposure. And there's a lot of exposure. And then through exposure also, you know, you'd say it
right.
comes money.
Right.
And the money and the exposure and the eyes and the stuff like that, it might yeah. be the moment where it happens. I believe this is the plot of a Goldie Hawn movie where she coached a football team.
She did coach a men's football team.
Yeah.
That's true. And I'm not trying to take
credit
for that.
No, I'm just saying.
But
we could reboot this.
I think it was a college football team also. So I think we've got
it
that.
Really writes itself.
I mean, there's been certain movies done about it, but, you know, like, why does it have to be, like,
yeah.
so unusual now? Mm-hmm. You know, I would just say, I'm going to predict when we're doing our 10th or 11th anniversary show for our podcast, when we're in our newer studios,
mm-hmm.
there will be a woman's coach in men's basketball.
Are you saying in college or
yeah, I'm going to say in college first. There will definitely be one woman that will go and take a men's college team and coach that team.
And, you know, with that, it does get a little bit snake-bitten. Then are you saying that men's legitimizes you? Like, you know, like you know, I'm a lot like
oh, no. I don't.
No, I'm not saying you. I'm saying does that become the
no,
the
I don't mean it. My big thing was I see men coaching women's basketball.
Right.
So I'm watching that. Even in the WNBA, there's some men. So I'm like, well, wait a minute now. And not that they're you want the best. You want to hire the best. Don't get me wrong. I'm saying, you know, like, you know, if a team wants to hire who they want to hire. But I'm just saying, is that, like, if you're a poor program in men's basketball and there's Dawn Staley, who's dominating. Or even, and maybe Gino Auriemma, you know, just saying for, because he's coaching women, saying, well, why wouldn't, how could he not coach the men's, you know what I mean?
Right.
Is it looked upon like, well, you're coaching women, you don't know the game as much, but you watch them play. You can't win the amount of games that Gino Auriemma did and the championships that he won or what Dawn Staley's doing now. It's amazing to me that it wasn't like somebody hasn't thought of, you know, well, maybe they have, but just said it'll never work or it can't. But I think with NIL money now, I think you can get them in two different ways. You can get people coming in based on, okay, wow, it's not like it would be a freak show or anything. Like, oh, look what we're doing here to get attention. We've got a good coach. We're going to pay you to come here because that's all anybody's looking for now anyway. They want to know how much am I going to get. And if it doesn't work, they leave in a year anyway. You know what I mean? So it's not like, you know, like look at John Calipari with Kentucky.
Just what I was thinking.
He exactly. Won one championship there, got knocked out in the first round, second round, you know, these last NCAA tournaments, was making a ton of money. When he first got there, he won a championship. And they said he could have run for governor of Kentucky and won in a landslide. Now, he was owed $33 million, you know, buyout. They said thanks for, but no thanks. He left the school because Arkansas, he's going to the University of Arkansas now. So there's a guy who, you know, was this, when he first got there, and he's gotten great recruits. And I talked about him a couple of weeks ago where they weren't winning, but he's saying, but all my guys are making billions of dollars in the NBA. If you look at all my players that have come through here, first one and doneers that are making tons of money. So what's the difference if there's a one and done with a woman or one and done with a guy? When you're the University of Kentucky is what they call the blue blood, which is now, you know, Duke, and you have to add UConn into it now. The job that Hurley's doing in UConn is amazing what that guy's done. And so, you know, I could see, by the way, who just retired from Stanford, Tara Vanderveer. She coached 38 of her 45 years at Stanford. She's went to 14 Final Fours, 3 national championships. She's got over 1,216 wins. You mean to tell me that woman couldn't have taken a program? A men's program that may be, you know, like, you know, just floundering and turned it around? You can't. And I don't mean to get on my soapbox and, you know, whatever, but I just think that it can be done and it will be done. And I would slam the table if it wouldn't mess up our board and things like that.
I fully agree. I think it's just...
And it's not like I'm arguing with you guys, but I think you agree. I mean, you know, it'll take... Somebody's got to be brave enough to do it.
I think people just need to chill out a little bit. One, and not you, you're fine. I could see the narrative going, like, because everything's got like 15 lines of conversation, because all these channels have to have a full day of programming every day about one thing.
Correct.
Being like, does this make it that it's more, you know, validating to coach the men's game over the women's game? Would you leave the women's? It's just, there'd be a lot of conversations, and I think that, like you said, it's inevitable. It will happen. It's just a matter of when and how.
I think it will.
Yeah,
it'd be great. It'd be great if it did. I mean, because, look, you can hire whoever you want. It's your university. It's like your team, your business, whatever. But I'm just looking and going, you know what? Do we even think about it? Or do we just, like, totally say, no, it'll never work? You know, you got to be out of the box here. If you're, you know, you can pick some programs that are not really doing well, you know, Division One, Division Two, whatever, and say, you know what, maybe we just need somebody, a different whole new attitude, a new winning culture brought in, and who's better than people that have won to change it. And men will respect the woman, and women will respect the man when, you know, if you come in there and lay the rules down and say, this is how we're going to do it. And if you don't like playing here, you can go somewhere else. But if you're getting NIL money to come in, you don't care who's coaching you, because it doesn't matter. I mean, look, that's why Nick Saban left Alabama, because they were like, well, how much you paying me? I don't care that you're Nick Saban. That doesn't mean anything to me anymore. That's great. You're Nick Saban. You're going to get me to the NFL. My talent's going to get me there too. But how much am I going to get coming to this school?
How much am I going to get paid?
So if that made him be one of the reasons he left coaching college football, then money talks. So they don't care who's coaching you. Because if you would just go in and say, okay, whatever Alabama's going to give me, I'll come here because I know I'm getting coached by the best of the best.
Right.
But now they're saying, well, how much, you know, that's great. Nick Saban, you're wonderful, and you're doing your Affleck commercials too, and you're on TV a lot, and you win a lot, but, you know, how much scratch am I getting to play here? So that's the key in college sports. Now, anyway, it's money. It's not basically the coaches. It's how much am I going to get? And if I'm not happy here after 1 year, I'm either going to go to another school or I'll wait for you to sweeten the pot for me to stay. So that's just, you know, the whole state of maybe college athletics or whatever. But that's been on my mind, and I figured I wanted to get that out there and throw that out there in the general public to listen to. So now the Masters has started, and I've already put the kiss of death on Rory McIlroy, because I said McIlroy's going to win the tournament. I think at this time he was like one under or even. So we'll see. But I always root for Rory McIlroy to win. I like him. But I was reading this article, and why I brought it up too is it's about African-American caddies that worked at the Masters for the first like 50 years at the Masters. They had their own like caddies. You couldn't bring your caddy to work with you at the Masters. You use these gentlemen that work there, and they helped, like they watched the building of the course and everything else, so they knew, like nowadays you have everything, like winds blowing this way, they could tell that. For the first 50 years they had these men that watched basically the course being built, and then the players would come in every year and they would get a caddy to work with them that was through the Masters itself. And for 50 years that went on. Then there was a kind of like some missed tee times at one point, and they blamed the caddies, and then they switched over in like the early 80s, that you could bring your own caddy now. You don't have to use a caddy through the Masters anymore. You can get your own caddy. But there's a documentary that Bill Murray, which I just found out, it's called Loopers, The Caddy's Long Walk, it's about not only the caddies that worked at the Masters, but just because when you do 18 holes, it's called doing the loop. But he's, because Bill Murray was a former caddy, he did that when he was going to school and whatever. But it just fascinated me that this, I had forgotten that they were just African-American caddies at one point. Then you could bring in your own caddies to use at the Masters. But it was just, it seemed, it was an interesting article. It was from last year, and they reran it this year on a CNN site that I saw. But I think I can get it on Amazon, so I want to check it out. It's just about the relationship between, like, we're basically like a coach and a player. It's just the caddy and that one person and how important they really are. Because there was a one player that Fuzzy Zeller, who won it his first time there, won it. He said it was like a blind man being led by his dog, taking me around the course, not putting down his caddy, calling him a dog, but saying like I didn't know where I was going, what I was doing, and the caddy that he used was amazing. He got him through, and some of the stories and things. But I
just, and so they were kind of all let go.
Well, they, if not that they were let go, it's just that instead of using their caddies, then they said, you know what, we want to use our own, I feel more comfortable, or whatever the case may be. Some were still used, because Ben Crenshaw won with a couple of the caddies that were there, and they had such great names, and they were there for, you know, for years and years. But I was reading it, and then all of a sudden, something happened to my phone, and I lost the article, so I didn't finish the whole thing, but I want to get it. But I did able to get the name of the movie, or the documentary, Loopers, The Caddy's Long Walk. So I want to just check that out. I think I can get it on Amazon. But basically, it's pretty cool. You go from the NCAA tournament right into the Masters. It's a good couple of weeks of sports if you're into...
This is a big couple of weeks for you.
Oh, I love them. The Masters is one thing on my bucket list that I like to go to. That would be one, go on a, maybe the Thursday or Friday, the Saturday, Sunday would be, but like go like the first day, the Thursday or Friday of the the tournament. Because Wednesday they do like this par three tournament where the families come and they all just play at this nine hole course that they designed for that. But that would be, that's a bucket list thing to go to the Masters would be great in Augusta and just walk the course and just see it, you know what I mean? Because there's so much history there and everything. That and the British Open would be the two I'd want to go to. You know, if I could do that, that would be cool.
Would you follow someone or would you stay at a hole? Like the
first? That's interesting. I don't know. I probably wouldn't, like, I think if I was going, I would probably, it'd be crazy to try to follow Tiger.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There'd be 50 million people. Like, you wouldn't see anything. I would probably try to get, like, you know, like, do the research, what's the best hole? Because you sit at, like, one hole, you can see, like, 11. I think you could see 12 and 13. Or if you sit at one that you really like and just... But I don't know if I want to just sit in a grandstand. I would want... Because if you bring a chair there, they say, and you get up, that seat, nobody could take your spot. You could mark it and say, this is mine. And they have, you know, security there, and they won't let somebody else take a chair. They're really, like, the Masters is totally different than anything else. The food is cheap. The souvenirs are cheap. They don't charge the patrons a lot. They, for tickets, yes, but for, like, souvenirs and things, they're, like, you know, $3 for a chicken sandwich, which they say is, like, amazing, or a pimento cheese sandwich or whatever. They do not charge you a ton of money for all the amenities that are
just
there.
Just the bar for entry.
You just can't bring yourself. You can't, you like, have your cell phone and follow, like, that type of thing. There's certain things you can't do. You can't, they don't like you screaming out, like, you're the man or things like that. A couple of people might do it, but you basically have to have course etiquette, you know, when you go there and everything. But once you get there, like, they treat you like a member, basically. Mm. You know, like, because if you have to ask how much it is to get into Augusta, you know, that you don't have the money. I mean, they had Condoleezza Rice was there, yes, because she's a member. She was the first woman, I think.
Woman member,
yes, of the Masters. You know, they had to break that wall down after years of
in the 2000s.
Yeah, it would be nice to do that, but it's just, to me, like, it's just like the way it looks, the whole course, just to see it. But I would probably, you know, I would follow somebody, like, maybe early in the morning, like, you know, just to walk a couple of holes. But they say the course is so hilly and everything, if you walk 18, you've walked 18 holes, you're tired. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's a up and down, and it's a lot of, you know, bends in the course and everything. But I don't know. I would like to go there just to experience that, you know, and just enjoy that. That would be a pretty cool thing to do. I think that would be one, or maybe St. Andrews in Scotland, you know, go and see that too would be pretty cool too to do that. But those would be the two things in golf that I'd want to do. I'd like to go to Wimbledon, check that out. But I would just walk around. I don't know, like, if I could sit, you know, like the whole, you know, just take that in or something like that. The U.S. Open is different, you know, it's more like to be seen. Though it's cool, but it's, yeah.
The documentary is on YouTube.
Loopers?
Loopers is on YouTube.
Oh, yep, excellent. So I could just go
just on. Confirmed that, yep.
Excellent. All right, so I'll give a review of it next.
Yes.
Because we were talking about doing one next week, but you are going to the nation's capital.
I will be in D.C.
You'll be in D.C. for a week.
I'll be staying at the Watergate.
You'll be staying at the Watergate Hotel, so they're very interesting. A lot of history there, Zach. I don't know if you know that, but there is a lot of history.
I've heard
there.
A thing or two.
You'll be aware of that. You can maybe get some pictures, or do me a favor, get one of breaking into a room.
Breaking into a room, or on the phone.
Yes, definitely on the phone, calling, you know, or wearing a Nixon mask. I'm sure they have it.
I'm sure that they have to.
You could do that. But that's, so we will be back, though, to do a draft one.
Which I can't wait
for. We're excited about. I know that. Everybody's fired up for that one. That's a big thing.
I just, because you mentioned Bill Murray, I don't know if you know this, I'm sure you do, but that Bill Murray's son is one of the assistant coaches of the UConn men's team that won.
Is it the UConn men's team that he's?
Yeah, he's the assistant.
Really? I didn't know it was the UConn's men's team.
Yeah, it's the team that just won. It's the UConn men's, right?
Yeah, where did you hear? I didn't know that.
He was there was all these pictures of him there at it. Like, he was at a lot of the games. So
he's the assistant coach?
He's one of the assistants. I didn't know like how deep the bet, but I think he's like a defensive assistant coach or something like that.
I had no idea of that.
So I knew
that he was coaching, but I thought it was a different school. But
UConn, there's pictures of Bill Murray with all the dogs.
There you go, Zach. That's breaking. That's something I did not know.
Breaking news right there.
Unbelievable. And speaking of Watergate Hotel and criminals and things like that. O.J. Simpson passed
away. I was wondering if we're going to talk about
it. We're going to talk about the juice. Now, Michael, you're way too young to remember the trial and everything of O.J. You were how old? In
93, so I had eight. I remember
eight or 9 years old. Yeah. Right? So yeah, wasn't it 94? Yeah,
that was 94.
That was when the Chase went, because that was the year the Rangers won.
Yeah.
The Knicks were going to the.
Rangers fans on Twitter are freaking out, considering there was in 94 there was an earthquake near New York. Uh-huh. There was an eclipse. OJ was big in the news, now all this, and it's 30 years, and people are like, it's destined.
It's destiny.
With the
we're blinded up.
Yeah, we're lining it. Because you need 80 things to happen for the Rangers to win. And with the playoffs to start in 9 days, so that's why it's...
Excellent.
So that's why. That's
right, yes. And you're going to see their last home game.
Yes.
Monday.
Yes.
But yeah, the thing about OJ was, it's hard to imagine how popular OJ was. It would be like, I'm trying to figure to Mikey to equate it. It'd be like...
Well, the thing, like you're saying, like there is no one who is that... It would be, I guess, the closest thing, and it's even on the outside super big margin, is like maybe like John Cena, a guy who had fame in one thing. But, I mean, right. That's even like one...
But I'm trying to equate it to... Let's say, because like OJ started doing commercials. So let's say Patrick Mahomes, right? He started with Hertz. He was the spokesman, run OJ, run through the airports. He was everything. Then he started to do movies. Then he did TV shows. So if Mahomes retired and OJ never won a Super Bowl, he wasn't a Super Bowl champion. He won the Heisman Trophy, great, ran for over 2,000 yards, amazing in one season. You know, as a football player, he was, you know, one of the greatest. One of the greatest running backs ever. You have to give him for that. But you have to put that aside because of what his popularity was, and then what transpired in his life was amazing.
I don't think anyone had, I don't know, like it's so hard, but like as big a heel turn as where he went from, and like, you know, there's basically all this, I think everyone should just watch. I think it's like a 4 or 5 part documentary.
Yeah, 30. No, 30 no, for 30. Well, they
did a great 30 for 30.
Yeah.
Because the John Travolta one was okay.
Right. There was a few that they, you know,
but that's movies 30 that were for done. 30. I think it's...
Or just documentaries alone on it with because everybody was a legal expert. There was days where like, oh, he didn't do, you know what? I don't think he...
Well, I mean...
And then the next... Oh, he... Clearly he did. You know, it was just... Then it got... So like crazy every day. You thought the Johnny Depp trial was big?
It's this.
Well, that's what made the 24-hour news cycle. Right. Was that?
You're right. It was just like, because it was so many things brought into it. Race was brought into it. It was, you know. Then it was like, well, the dad, you know, the dad's like, people didn't like the dad that he's crying about his son. You know, he was put down. I'm like, the guy lost his son. You know what I mean?
It became insane. It's O.J. Simpson, Made in America. It is the... Because I was obsessed with it. My teacher, who is now in jail, my fourth grade teacher, who is now in jail.
Oh, Jesus.
For basically stealing from the school. Millions.
Who shall go nameless.
We'll go nameless. We don't want any slander things. But like, right. Ran down to the playground to tell me that the verdict had come in because I was so interested in it.
Wow.
I didn't know him from football. I knew him from the Naked Gun movies, which were my favorite movies, and I couldn't believe that Nordberg could have done something wrong.
Exactly.
Yeah, I didn't think you were following his like your favorite running back. So I had to feel some movies or TV.
Right. I loved him for his Avis commercials. His time.
It was Hertz.
Yeah, Hertz.
His time, but he could have done Avis at the same time. It didn't matter.
He was making money. He was also an announcer. If you want to talk about two announcers who have not aged well and have not gone without their complete controversies, the Battle of the Network Stars, O.J. Simpson and at the time, Bruce Jenner.
Yes, that's right.
Jenner.
Yes.
You know, two people who have just had massive heel turns, those two. O.J. Simpson's a very, very, very complex
complex yeah. character, and it's and the best documentary that I saw on it is the 30 for 30. You know, you can't. He's undeniable.
Following that, you know, the Bronco on the 405 freeway. This is, you know,
was it Al Simmons or no? What's the guy was?
Yeah, Al Collins.
Al Collins. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've got OJ in the car, back up, and meanwhile he's got money and a disguise in the car.
And he's gonna kill himself, like the
man. Right. He was. Then he wanted to go to her grave site, Nicole's. I mean, it was just the. Then you know, people were like, "No, expert." Everybody was an expert on what was going on and how it happened. I mean, Al Michaels worked with OJ. He knew OJ. He was like that. Peter J. It was huge news.
It was the way I will culture remember. It was every day I watched Power Rangers. Every day I watched Power Rangers. I think it was 4 o'clock.
Right.
Power Rangers wasn't on TV anymore, so I watched the OJ Simpson trial because every day,
right,
the OJ Simpson trial was on TV, and every day you watched it, and it that's when I learned what DNA was because it was right. pretty new at the time. You know, like, for better or worse, it kind of made, you know, a lot of things make the entertainment world what it is today. But, like, the 24-hour news coverage, the really? Sensationalization.
Well, I'm just reading a little thing here because it's saying how the trial changed. It was nearly a two-hour car chase, aired live by news networks and watched by 95 million people. Here's the other thing, too. The NBA, which was airing the Rockets-Knicks finals, cut yeah. away from the game.
Yeah.
To show the chase.
And so that day, there's another 30 yeah, for 30.
Great one about the Rangers parade the during Rangers the parade. Knicks game final during the chase. It
right,
was like
right.
The opening of the World Cup when it was in the United States.
Oh, yeah.
And Arnold Palmer's last game all happened on the exact same day. I think that day still is the most pizzas ever ordered for
could be
was that
oh yeah
and it was
yeah.
Al Cowings not Al Cowings forgive me I yeah this got
it was like, funny because I was driving for work today and like ESPN was on like the morning New York radio was on right, and it's just right. like and they're like oh and I don't know the two guys who are doing because it's random like you know, morning guys, but they were like, oh, and OJ died.
Boomer Esiason, I think, might be.
Well, they have like a show, but it was like one of their, like, oh, I don't know, it's like Chris and Canty or something oh, like Chris that.
Yeah, I don't
some know. Of the, but yeah. they were like, oh, and OJ's dead. And they're like, and hopefully that's the last we have to talk about him. Okay. And they like moved out. It was just right, so funny because, right. like, I was like, okay, that's how I found out that.
It was so, but it was like, I saw it today because they, when they did it, they cut to. Jeremy Schapp, Dick Schapp's son, and they were talking about it. I'm like, we know. I mean, if you don't know that he played football, you don't need like somebody. You could have gotten somebody off the street, basically, that was in their 30s to tell you who O.J. Simpson and what that was. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, well, you know, he played football, and then of course he was up for the killings of his. I guess the only person like is happy. Well, there's a lot of people happy, but the actual people that did kill. Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman, because that's what OJ said he would find he that.
Yes, yeah.
And cancer beat him, or he would have been able
well,
to.
I did see a bunch of jokes being like, OJ can now rest easy knowing the killer is finally passed on.
yeah,
so
right. That's good. Yeah, that's great. You know, that's great. Yeah.
It's,
yeah.
It's, yeah, it's one of those things that it's, you know, like, you can go in so many directions, like, you know, like, basically, his trial was a retrial of other trials and everything like that. It's very, very...
Well, just even the judge, Ito. I mean, the way he was critiqued, he's letting them get away with this and this getting away with this. And then with the gloves and the gloves were bloody bloodstained, and they made him wear rubber gloves first. So how could they fit?
And then you have his lawyer. I mean, the
and
thing
Johnny
is,
Cochran. It was and Chris Darden. It was like
it
oh
was
my
a
God.
Meme before there, like before memes.
Oh
were,
yeah,
were,
absolutely.
Everything from that trial was some. Yes, Judge Ito. Then Mark Furman, who's like House of Nazi stuff.
exactly. Comes up. Effley Bailey, Effley who was like.
Dershowitz.
Dershowitz, exactly.
What you call it? Marsha Clark's hair.
Yes.
It was like a discussion.
Yes. Kardashian.
We now have to deal with that because thanks. because of Robert Kardashian.
Right.
Juice, we love you, Juice. Come
yes.
home, Juice.
Juice, please.
Please, Juice.
He's
please.
Writing letters. And then, oh my God, it was just Because I was thinking about it. I go, do we really care? And then I said, you know what? I got to mention it a little bit because Liz was loved it. It was, that's all that was on.
I watched it with mom.
Everybody,
I watched it all the time. Exactly. I was obsessed with it.
Everybody watched it.
Yeah.
I mean, Mike, you have no like idea. I mean, the Johnny Depp thing was this, but this was murder and it was the juice. And I mean, you know, thank God that Johnny, it wasn't murder with the Johnny Depp thing. But as big as that was and the size that people had and then the switching of something, because I don't think he could have done that. There's no way he could have done it. And then you're like, well, maybe, you know, and then you,
but I was no legal scholar, but at first I was like, there's no way Norberg did it. And then the more you go, like, oh, there's no way he didn't do it.
Right. And then you had Kate O'Kalin, which was just another, it was like a Hollywood movie that they were putting together. You couldn't script it any better than what
you could not write that whole thing.
No.
And nothing today.
Star football player turned actor turned pitch man. Basically beheads wife and a friend of wife.
Maybe guy just delivering jacket.
Guy returning glasses to the woman that the mom left them there. You know what I mean? No good deed. God, for, you know, rest in peace, the poor man. But it was just such a big deal. And work people talked about. You could not have an opinion because everybody was asking you at work, what do you think? I go, you know what? Because, you know, depending on the day, like, well, you know, geez, that, like, because somebody would stop you in the hallway and go, you know, look, I don't think he could have, because the sun was up at us, and then Furman and this, and you're like, okay, I can, okay. And then you walk down the hall and go, you believe, what's the difference with Mark Furman? You know what I mean? It was like,
and it was every day, and I was young, so it felt like it was like 6 years long, but it was a long
trial, and it was 7 days a week, because on the Saturday and Sunday, they still talked about it. Didn't matter. There was always there was something brought up about it, or this bit of evidence that came out, or that bit of evidence that came out, you know? So it's like a very...
It created essentially reality TV, or like, you know, like almost like the true crime doc obsession came from that. Helicopters, police helicopters, I mean, not police helicopters, news helicopters were not really a big thing until... That was year, because in that documentary,
well, it was very big to follow him on the 405. Well,
they had many. The problems was like all of these different feeds were jumping through at the time, so you'd be watching NBC and then getting like Fox's feed of the cut because they just didn't know how to do this.
No, yet. It was incredible. It was incredible.
I cannot think of anything that the only thing that's as close to it. Is basically the way we talk about national politics. It's the only thing that penetrates as much as, oh my God, can you believe this?
Well, they said the first criminal trial to be nationally televised with Ted Bundy's conviction in 79. But Ted Bundy wasn't like a beloved figure.
No.
You know what I mean? What Ted Bundy did was outrageous and horrific, but he wasn't on TV.
He was famous for being a killer.
Being a killer and getting away with, you know, escaping and everything. That was Ted Bundy's thing. And he was this good-looking guy that couldn't have done it. And then, whoa, man, this guy was... But this was... He was beloved. Everybody liked O.J. There was nobody that didn't like O.J. There was nobody. I don't remember, like... You liked him as a football player, a pitch man. You liked him, you know, on movies, on TV shows. He did... You know, Saturday Night Live. He was on everything, this guy. Everything he was on.
Orange juice sponsor.
Miami's got the oranges, but Buffalo's got the juice. I mean, that was the thing with Howard Cosell on Monday Night Football. It was amazing. Whatever. I mean, the I'm drawing a blank on what they call... The Electric Company was his offensive line. I believe it was the Electric Company. I think it was. Yeah, that... Because they drove the juice's energy, you know what I mean. I should know that better, but I believe that's what it was.
It's just.
But I'm sure I'll get ripped if I don't remember that perfectly. But
it's such an amazing story.
It really was.
It becomes not just his; it becomes like all of our story in some way.
Yeah, everybody that was alive at that time, unless you were obviously a child, you know, young, but you knew it. You couldn't get away from it. It was newspaper. When newspapers, mattered back in the day. Like, what's the next headline or what's it going to be or, you know, whatever. It was.
I mean, Court TV was around, but Court TV became
assigned to TV. Everybody.
You had to have.
Every lawyer that was that could have been hired was on a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
That could have been hired was on a TV show. But that's really weird, Mike, about the Rangers.
Yeah, a lot of similarities lining
up. That's incredible. That is incredible.
If
that's
one good thing can come from this, the Rangers.
OJ passing, maybe families can get peace from that.
And New York can get some peace with
the Rangers winning the cup again. I wanted to ask you that too, Mike, and what a transition we're doing here.
Let's look for the positive here.
Yes, since you brought up the Rangers too, and I know that the playoffs are going to be starting soon, but if we took the Rangers out of the equation, Mike, that they, you know, let's say they won 10 cups in a row now, and you're like, okay, let somebody out. Is there one team that if the Rangers don't win the cup, which we want, obviously, then you'd say, oh, thank goodness, I'm glad that this team won, or one player you're rooting for? Like, does Connor McDavid have to win a Stanley Cup to be, like, considered in the pantheon of great players, or would you still think that this guy, like, the teams let him down, or would you be crushed if he won if the Rangers were eliminated, let's say?
I mean, no, just like we talked about earlier, to bring it back, like Caden Clark doesn't need to win a national championship to be the best. Right. I mean, McDavid's, and I'm the one who defends like Gretzky out of everybody. Even outside of Gretzky, he thinks that, that he wouldn't do as good now or whatever. But no, I think McDavid is going to be like the top five to ever have played ever. Because there's things that he could just do that I've never seen anybody ever be able to replicate, even watching old games. But I mean, that
you
being
watch
said,
old games too.
I try to watch the history of stuff. But you know, they talk about Orr, you know, because Gretzky compared Cal Makar to Orr. He says he's the best defenseman since him. But I mean, as far as that goes, this season is really wide open. Where like, not even last year with the Bruins being the best team historically ever with points and wins. Like, every year it seems like there's a out the gate, like a favorite, and it's just who's trying to keep up and will that favorite win or whatever. But this year seems like it's the most wide open it's ever been.
Really?
And some people are calling it the greatest regular season of hockey with all these personal achievements of different players and all these things going on and guys doing things like Austin Matthews close to scoring 70 goals in a season. It's only happened like four times, and McDavid going to potentially hit 100 assists in the season. And like, you know, all these players having over,
get goal number.
He got like, he's the only player now to have like 30 goals or more in like every season he's played. And,
And
Crosby is like,
still going.
Yeah. He's clawing. Really, he's the only, they traded away their like one of their best players at the deadline, 'cause they thought they were going to, you know, be out of it. And then he's like single-handedly bringing them back.
Yeah,
and got a point. He's gotten a point per game every season for 19 seasons in a row, which is like only Gretzky's ever done that.
Unbelievable.
So it's like, that's all crazy. I mean, maybe I wouldn't mind if Dallas won. There's a lot of guys on there that I kind of like. And at this point too, it's like more who I'd root against, you know, like if the Rangers were out of it, I wouldn't want anybody in the East to win it. And it's not like hatred of other players, you don't want it to be like that. But I don't want the Avs to win it. They've already won it kind of recently. I don't want the Oilers to win it because I love McDavid. I want him to get a cup, but there's a few guys on his team I don't like. Right. I would prefer if they were on another team and maybe he could win it or whatever. But so I wouldn't necessarily be rooting for them. Maybe Nashville I wouldn't mind if they won, because like Nashville at Dallas, like it's not like they've beaten us up this year that they've like, you know, really, it's, that's fine. But I mean, this year is so, like I said, wide open, where other years it felt like
there's only a few.
I hate to say this stuff because I always want to be cautiously. I'm always thinking like the Rangers can go 82-0 in the regular season. Nothing matters until the playoffs. But like, this is the most confident I've been of a Rangers team. Like,
and you like this coach?
I mean, so far, I didn't like the hire originally.
Right.
I wanted them to hire their then Hartford affiliate coach, Chris, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but then the Oilers ended up firing their coach midseason, and he went on the 16-game winning streak, and now they're like the one of the best top five teams in the league. And
right.
I mean, it helps when you coach McDavid, yeah, but he was also a good... So that's what I originally wanted, but Laviolette isn't bad at all.
Uh-huh.
He's one of the most winningest coaches ever. He clearly... He's doing stuff like, it's tough to say that he's also, he's done really good. He's done some questionable things, but it's tough to say that he's made the team like tremendously better when, I mean, to Gallant's credit, he went to the playoffs, his only two seasons coaching.
Right.
It's just that.
It wasn't like he was taking on a rebuild.
This no.
Was like a retooling a little bit.
But he did, to his credit, has done a lot. And there's certain things he does after the game that I like. Like, if the Rangers win or lose a tight game or big game, Gallant was always the first one off. Laviolette will jump up and celebrate with his players. They do a big pregame or like a post practice hug that they all do together. There's a lot of team bonding things that go on.
Right,
so
right.
I do like
Andy Tortorella.
Yeah, he's doing a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, so you don't
stuff.
Want to see the Flyers win. Right?
And seeing basically what felt like a playoff game at the, I mean, I don't want to talk about it too much because we already did, but going to the the outdoor series, the stadium series, and seeing them win that game felt like they had just won like a game seven in the playoffs. But
Mike, I think they've really been snake bitten since you've gone to that game with them. You know, they've really been on fire.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So I mean, I don't want to say it's a tipping point.
No,
of the season,
I mean
but
at
it might
this
have been the tipping point of the season.
At this point, they are after the All-Star break. That's when they took
they
fire.
Really,
but at this
really
at this point of the recording, they have the most wins in the league, and they have the best points. They could win the President's Trophy, which I'm also not nearly superstitious. Some people don't want them to win it.
Right.
Some people, I don't care. I think that if you're going to win or lose, you're going to do it based on yourselves.
Exactly.
If it's not the President's Trophy that did it, it's yourselves. But I also think that this team is very capable of getting there. It just shows, like I was mentioning before, Gallant. It really kind of shows kind of how lucky he was with the team he had, because Lindy Ruff, the coach of the Devils at the time, outcoached him in every possible way in that series. The Rangers go up 2-0, both away games. They go up 2-0, go back to the Garden, end up losing four straight, you know, to the Devils to get eliminated in the first round last year. Lindy Ruff outcoached him in every possible way. And then, you know, Lindy Ruff this year has a team that was a Stanley Cup contender, bottom of the league, gets fired midway through the season.
Right, right.
So it's like, if Lindy Ruff outcoached you, that's not that's not showing you much. So it's really good that Peter Laviolette also stepped in and made these bigger I mean, with injuries too, every one of the Rangers defensemen has been hurt at some point this year. Filip Hedl got the concussion in November, has been out the rest of the season.
Right.
Blake Wheeler, season-ending injury. They had to deal with 2 months of Igor Shesterkin forgetting how to be the best goalie in the world.
Right,
luckily, he stepped back into that spot. But they, I mean, Benoit Laird coaching Jonathan Quick back to looking like... And that was another thing starting this season. I did not want Quick to be on the team. I have a bad disdain for anybody on that 2014-15, you know, cup beating Rangers team.
Right.
But I've also
really
now
had like a second, like,
oh, he they
coming basically, or lack of a better.
Yeah, he had a monumental like drop off on the Kings, got traded to Columbus, and then said, I'm not playing in Columbus, then got traded to Vegas from Columbus without playing a game. One, I think it was like 4 or 5 games with the Vegas. They obviously won the cup, so we got another cup.
Right.
Rangers signed him in the offseason. It was funny. It was like a bunch of people shared this sentiment where it was like when he passed Ryan Miller to be the all-time winning American coach. So they're like, the last time I was this emotional about Jonathan Quick, it was for a very different reason.
Yeah, right.
But
right.
It's like, that's also part of what this team has done. I care that Quick's on the team. And I'm like, you know what? If you want to help us get, you know, revenge for the 25th, if you want to like, okay. I think he's from Brooklyn. He is a New York guy. He does love the Rangers. That's why he signed there.
Yeah.
If he wants to feel a little bad and help us, and he is playing like world-class goalie again, if he wants to help us get a little bit,
that would be
because
that man made all of us cry.
I always tell everybody I talk to sports about, I'm like, the only time I ever cried was that one time when they lost in the finals.
That was insane.
That was the only time sports had ever, and I'd witnessed the Mets go to two World Series in my lives. I obviously lose both of them, but still, I witnessed the Giants go to three Super Bowls, win two of them. Right. Like, but it was, and I didn't, I was happy, but I didn't, and I didn't cry when the Mets lost. And it was even tougher because it was the Rangers go to the finals, lose, Mets go to the finals, that same like continuation season, lose. But I didn't care about that. It was hockey.
Was born in Milford, Connecticut, actually.
Oh, Connecticut.
But that's
right, I think they here. Said he grew up, because I don't know. He they probably grew like up in the city or something
looking,
like that.
Yeah, I'm just looking here that, yeah, he was, I mean, the guy is, well, you know what? When you have guys that are role players too but have won, you know, when you add them to your team.
Yeah.
That's another thing. You've got champions that, like, the Rangers' fortunes turned, speaking of, you know, Messier when he came, you know, and want, but he taught them how to win. Because I remember them saying about Messier, like, they used to have like a table in the middle of their locker room, and the locker room was like, it almost felt like it was divided. And the first thing he did was he took the table and threw the table out and said, we're a team. We don't have tables dividing us. We don't have, and it takes just maybe one or two other guys that have won. And like the Rangers have been in the playoffs, they've been to the, you know, they've been to the finals.
Well, this is the, I mean, like you said, this is the team with, I mean, they have Barkley Goudreau, who's won with Tampa.
Right.
He was there when they won their back to back. You have Jonathan Quick, who won two and what was it, 2 and 4 years.
Right.
With that, now you have guys like Trouba, who's, you know, the leader. I didn't really want him to be the captain, but you have to think, I'm not in the locker room. They voted him.
Right.
You have guys like Trouba. Everybody is just getting healthier at the right time. They're all, everybody who's going to play for the season, you know, outside of two players, they're back. I mean, Kreider's been to the playoffs almost every single year of his career. I remember when he was with that team, with like, felt like a whole nother era ago with, you know, Callahan and McDonough and Stahl and Richards. Yeah, and then he was there for that with Lundqvist, and now he's here. Like, you have him, like, he's been to the playoffs. So he knows this, like, every...
And he was a vital part of both teams. Like, the handoff from, like, my era to your era, the common building block is Kreider, and that guy has been...
He went from the rookie, like, sensation to now he's, like he was their second pick to be captain if they didn't have...
I kind of wanted him to be captain, but that's just...
I did, too.
I'm not in the room.
You know, from according, I really did, too, and because I follow, like, all the beat, right, all the... According to, like, everybody almost kind of wanted him to be except him. So that's kind of why, too. Like, don't get me wrong, it's not like Trouba was like the makeup pick.
No.
But like,
but maybe he felt that was better for the team.
He felt like
he's like, you know what? It's a different voice, maybe. Mm-hmm. I can lead by how I do things rather than you see me working hard every day.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And that's also credit to Trouba being the, you know, win or lose. Like, when they lost this most recent game to the Islanders, like, Trouba always having to be there every game. There was the first game Trouba got back from injury, and I'll credit him with this. He got back, and they lost the game almost essentially because of him. He had two bad giveaways and that, and he came out, and he was like, everybody played good tonight except me. And to be that as the captain and say it's, you know, that's a
important kind of
and
stuff.
It's New York pressure over any other market.
Absolutely.
And to come out and be like that, you know.
Because
it's,
like you said, it's been 30 years,
yeah,
you know, since they won the Cup, and it's like, you know, it's like, this is it. And I think probably another good thing that's happened is Lundqvist isn't the... Oh, no.
Yeah.
You shouldn't go there.
Yeah.
I went there. And I love... I'm just busting chops.
All I'm saying is this is the most... And I mean, I can be superstitious, but this is a... I don't want to even talk about it because this feels a lot like 2014.
Mm-hmm.
It feels a lot like that, like down to the President's Trophy, but it does feel a lot more like 94 in some ways, but... That could also just be the historiography of it and all that, and us looking for hope. I just think it's going to be a very, very exciting time.
Okay. Yeah, it was a lot of the things I like to think about is like when they say you're in the good times, enjoying, because I mean, you think about there's the ages. Panarin's almost, you know, he's in his mid-30s. Kreider's only got a few years left. You don't know how long Igor is going to be the best at the league, you know, and then we have a lot of free agents coming up and all this stuff. So it's like, I remember these past three seasons, people, like, these are the good times. Like, so enjoy this team.
Are they the, like, 1A favorite, the Rangers, to at least get to the finals, the Stanley Cup finals, or are they...
There's always with the they haven't won in 30 years is always kind of like,
right,
they're in the top 3-4 teams that, like, experts and, like, betting odds and all that stuff. I mean, honestly, Dallas is the second team in the league with points and wins and all that. Dallas is up there. Who is it? Colorado. It's tough to Colorado and Edmonton also because McKinnon, when I say like nobody's like McDavid, McKinnon's the closest thing. I remember he was touted as the next, because Crosby was the next Gretzky.
Right.
McKinnon was the next Crosby, but then McDavid is now like the next like, like Gretzky or like best, like every best ever. But like
if
that was
make a hockey player.
All of the DNA of Canada.
Right, yeah, pretty much.
Is in him. Yeah.
But no, it's when I say like front runner, but like this is like honestly why I don't like to say again the Rangers have a shot, but this is the most, as a Rangers fan, wide open year I've ever seen it being, like where every potential first round matchup, and like this is talked about, I don't really watch, but the Pat McAfee show and like PK Subban, they do on ESPN, they do stuff, and even on like their TSN, their sports and their Hockey Night in Canada, it's always like there's not one first round matchup that you look at and you're like, oh well, that's gonna be in four, and that's gonna be, and then there's like the wild card spot, the second wild card spot in the East has jumped 5 times in 4 days.
Right, with it
being between the Flyers, the Penguins, the Islanders, you know, the Capitals. It's just constantly been leapfrogging each other.
So they're playing playoff hockey before playoff hockey even starts.
Every game for the past like month for all these teams has been like win or go home, and all of them keep winning. It's crazy. So it's
playoff. Pre-playoff hockey, which is nothing better than playoff hockey anyway, you know, and the whole cup thing and whatever. But nobody's going to give the kind of coverage that we're going to give.
No, I just want it.
And we are, you know, we want the Rangers, but we do give, like you guys do give credit, you know, to other teams, Michael, which is nice too. Well, no, yeah, you are, yeah. But no, no, Michael will say, you know, this guy's, you know, good or whatever.
Obviously, I mean,
to win.
I love hockey more than any sport. It's my favorite, but I love it so much that I want the Rangers to win every single year. But I'll admit, like, I'll watch the greatest players because I'm like, I love the sport so much where I'll watch, you know,
that's
some McDavid or McKinnon or
both of you guys. And I don't mean to cut you off. I'm sorry. But if the Rangers get eliminated, will you still watch like the playoffs? Will you still watch the final, or you may miss a game and not worry about it as much? Well, first it'd be crestfallen that they lost.
Oh, yes.
I get that. But like if the Yanks aren't in the, you know, in the pennant competition or the Giants, I'll watch football even if the Giants are out of it because they weren't good all year, so I didn't expect. But in baseball, like if the Yanks aren't in it, I don't care. I don't care if, you know, well, you know, for the Mets, I'll watch it for you guys to see.
Yeah.
But
they won't be in it. Don't worry.
But I don't care. You know, but will you watch like the finals at least, Mike? I mean, you may not watch every playoff game, but you'll be into it. Like if it's, Edmonton, Tampa Bay or something, let's say. Like,
I'll still be
heavy for Edmonton over Tampa Bay, though, I think, right?
Yeah, it all depends. You know, it always depends on the East about
who beats
the Rangers if they get there. But no, I mean, no matter what, I'll watch the finals. I'll always watch the finals. I feel
cool
like,
to,
yeah. I mean, it's almost, and I bring up Giuliano just because like outside of like family, like I don't really have ever friends over, say, hey, let's watch this, because I'm the worst person to watch playoff hockey with if the Rangers are in it.
Right.
I'm like, people are always like, oh, you want the Rangers to make the playoffs, but it's like, then I don't enjoy hockey when they're in it,
because
I cannot relax the entire game. I don't care if they're up by 5 goals the minute left, I'm still like glued to the screen.
If
they win, I'm always like, well, okay, that's 1 of 16, so I'm never happy if they win. If they lose, don't talk to me, because you can't tell me they played good, even if they did.
Oh,
you can't tell me. That's the thing. Like, you can't tell me they had a good game. You can't tell me it went one bad call. Can't tell me, well, at least look on the bright side. They lost the first game of the series. They have 3 more. You know, you can't console me in any way.
I know that.
So it's like,
I feel that.
It's almost, I mean, you want the Rangers to be there, but I do enjoy playoff hockey more when I'm just watching like two teams I'm like, I don't care about.
Right.
If they're in the finals like the past couple of years. But
then you can just watch it with like, oh, that was great, that was great. But
there's
not that I can't get up now because I haven't moved in an hour and
I have to wear my
I
have to wear, because now I have
like
certain things I wear, And then right. if they lose in that, I can't wear it the next time.
I know.
There was a game I remember that I had to work late and I missed. And they won. And I was like, am I... Like, and it's so stupid, but you're like, well, I think it's better if I do, like,
if I don't want
if that. I don't, because maybe I'm like, it's nuts.
Oh yeah,
what it does to your brain.
Like when I'm watching like Notre Dame football, I'm like, this the whole game. They're so good. This team is really good. Then they give up like a touchdown. I'm going, are you kidding?
Or it always happens like you know, you're watching the game, you're glued to it. Then you go to the bathroom, the Rangers score. Then you're like, well, I'm staying in the bathroom for now another hour, and I'm not getting out and until the other team scores, and then you can let yourself, okay, now I can go out.
As I've gotten older, I've gotten a little bit better, but you have to ask, like, Liz, Mom, I was like, what are you going? Or what do you make? Like, or what are we going to have? I won't drink. Like if I'm thirsty as hell, but I go, I can't drink because they've got one goal, 5 minutes to go. Yeah. I'm thirsty, but I can't.
I think when we watched the finals, we unintentionally were doing the same thing where we were in Lundqvist's position the whole time. And like when he would dive over to make a save, we were doing the same. But like it was totally
making fun of you and me because we were almost in the same spot, in the same part, just like.
Yeah.
Because every one of those games was all down to how many saves could Lundqvist
make. Well, because I even remember.
To reserve a one goal lead.
Because that was always the thing, even not to bring up, but like when they did lose it in the finals, it's like on paper, the series is like 4-1, so it looks, but three of those games went to overtime. Two of those games, the Rangers lost in overtime. Right. You're like, if it's one other way, so the whole time you are squatted down, like you have to make the save. And I always tell Juliana the story. I remember. Because it was a cross-crease pass to Alec Martinez, who ended up getting the goal.
Right.
And Lundqvist dives over in desperation, misses, lying on the ice. And I remember at Zach at your house, I audibly screamed. I dove over to make the actual save. Like I was Lundqvist. Right. And when you just hear the goal siren, they're celebrating because they were home, also the Kings.
Right, the Kings
just like Lundqvist, I was just staying on the floor. But it's like it gets to your head. You're like, if I'm in this spot, you can't. If they can't score on me, they're not scoring on my team.
It's the ultimate reality sports because it could break your. You go through every emotion when you're watching. Like you're euphoric, they're up, and then wait a minute, what happened? Or that wasn't a. You start like everything goes through your head, or you know, or who is he hurt, or is he not hurt? Because I used to be like when I was more immature, like if somebody got hurt, I'd be like, all right. Scoop them up, get them out. We're rolling. We're moving. You know what I mean? I don't need this guy. Like he can't get up. Okay, poor guy. Now I'm more a little bit more. I try to be a little bit better than that. But I was brutal.
Oh yeah.
I remember when Joe Theismann. I didn't realize he had broken his leg when the bone was sticking out during that game against the Giants. I was like, and he went to Notre Dame and whatever. But he was playing for the Washington team at the time. And I'm like, all right, let's. Can we just get him off the field? You know, let's go. The Giant, we want. And then I realized, you know, you see this bone sticking out of the line. I go, maybe I shouldn't have been so rough on him at that point. But I'm just like, come on, let's go.
I don't think anything.
Momentum is, you're stopping momentum or whatever.
Yeah.
Nothing brings out the worst in me like Rangers hockey.
Yeah.
Like Rangers playoff hockey. Like I get. I'm usually not a very angry guy.
They're part of your DNA.
But you get, still remember when you picked me up and ran around the living room in 94. So that's now, I was 8.
Yeah.
30 years ago, the insanity of that. And I had watched you watch a bunch of World Series, Rangers, Yankees win. That's great.
I never thought I'd see it with the Rangers. You know, it was like, this is never going to happen. Like when I showed you, I sent you that thing of those are my Rangers with Esposito and Duguay dancing like that. Those were 79. Those were like, I said, all the.
Well, that's when you told me I was a. That's, I remember what you said to me when I, because we were at Zach's house. They, you know, Zach drove me home with Steven, even though he'd, you know, we all went back together.
Right.
And I was still crying, and you gave me a hug, and you said, now. You know what it's like to be a Rangers fan. He was like, you were a Rangers fan before, but now you're a Rangers fan. And I was like, yep.
They rip your heart out. But you, next year,
I mean, October 1st when the season started, right. You buy right back in. But right that whole off season, you're just like, I can't let it do this to me.
Things in your mind, like you see that Lundqvist like that.
Yep.
And they, so when they win it, the euphoria is gonna wipe all that away. You know what I mean? Yes, then yeah. when they finally win it, you're gonna say, okay, he was long. It didn't happen. But
I just think it's just. Rangers, if things are looking good, should sign Hank for just one day contract.
So yeah, it's just that.
So if ever it happens,
he can get his name on the cup. When they win it in the Garden,
Hank will be there.
Hank
yes.
will
yeah.
definitely be
they
there.
They will descend.
They'll be booing. You don't think Gary Bettman's going to bring out Henrik Lundqvist to help him bring that cup out? Because trust
he's
me,
he's going
to
get booed so hard.
He's going to get booed so hard. That guy. I mean, and he's tries Bettman. He really does try, but. Yeah, that. But you're not going to get covers like this anywhere. But
no, the only thing I do want to just in Rangers history.
Yes.
This week, 26 years ago, one of the greatest moments in Rangers history happened. Dan Cloutier challenges the entirety of the Islanders bench to a fight.
Oh yes, the goalie what? After having a huge fight at the line brawl there.
Then
he skates over the bench up.
The entire bench.
You want to see devastating when the Islanders took out the Rangers when the Islanders kind of dynasty started. And you're watching that and you're going, the Islanders won this thing. Are you kidding? I mean, it was like, and as great as the dynasty was with the, and they had great players, the Islanders, Potvin, Gillies, you know what I mean? Nice, all those guys. I hated them.
Yeah.
Trotsky, I still, you know what
well,
I mean?
Well, the Rangers still do. Potvin sucks.
Yeah.
At the, and I think not a single person at the Garden outside of, yeah, knows who he is.
You do the whistling and then
oh,
Potvin
yep.
sucks.
It's always, absolutely. It's always Potvin sucks. And like I'm saying, and you're looking around as the crowds are getting younger and younger
yeah,
and it's other, and not a single person either could pick him out of
still,
a lineup.
And I met Anders Hedberg and Ulf Nielsen.
Yeah.
The guy that pet Potvin, you know.
Yeah.
And I was working at Motor Vehicle, and they're he's right there, and I'm like, oh my god, I'm a huge Ranger. I love the Rangers, and oh my god, and this girl was a summer temp, and she was standing next to me, and he could have cared less about me talk. He's talking to the girl. I'm going, I can't believe you're here. I'm gonna take care of you. Just stay. And he was like, uh-huh. I'm like trying to this one little hockey thing. Could you? But I have his, and I guess I won't get in trouble. I have his old driver's license stub.
Well, that's cool.
In my diary of things, not a diary, but a collection of things.
Memorabilia
collection of it. I say, you know, I paid for his driver's license to get renewed, and the guy's making 20 times more than me at this point. And he's like, yeah. Would you like? And he's going, would you like to babysit my kid? You could. I live in. I'm like, hello, dude. Could you just like throw me a bone here? It was crazy. And I also met this, I think it was Doug Solomon. He played for the Rangers and he got traded. And his wife came in. And she was like, oh, I'll send. And I was like, no, don't worry about, it was just funny, like seeing the Rangers, their wives or them coming in there. But it was crazy working there and seeing so many people. But yeah, when I saw the Ranger guys, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm meeting you. And I couldn't have cared less. Couldn't have cared for what blew me up. Totally blew me up. He's just
he won't be there at the cup winning ceremony.
He won't be
yeah.
there. And if he is, I'm going to say, remember me?
Remember
yeah,
you?
Have
you
his,
renewed your
yeah.
license back in the 80s, dude. You know, but that's, I digress. I'm just before we end, Loot is on with Maya Rudolph. It's on Apple TV. Second two seasons. I talked about it before. Just want to say this. Out of like the Saturday Night Live characters the people that have been on Saturday Night Live, she's underrated. She's so funny in the show. She's just really funny.
She's amazing.
Very funny. And I'm watching the show. It's from Turkey. It's called As the Crow Flies. It's about a woman journalist who they feel is being aged out, and this girl wants to take over her job. Running of a network broadcast. She's like, let's say, she'd be like...
Katie Kirk
or something like that. Whoever was like the head... She's got her own TV show, and this girl, young girl, wants to get her out and is doing everything possible. It's on Netflix. Three seasons. I'm only...
Watching a Turkish drama
on Netflix. Telling you. But here's what I was thinking. You know what I would like to do? I would like to be the voice guys that, like, because the show is, they're obviously they're talking the
language. Yeah, and the person who does the dubbing.
Because sometimes they're dead on. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
Are you saying the actor or the way the things are matching?
The way the guy is, or the woman is, like, doing the role.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you'd like, you know, this is not even close to what this person, but I would, that would be a cool job. Like, just watching the show and just going,
person who does the dubbing.
Yeah. Person who does the dubbing. I mean, that would be so great to do that job.
Voiceover work would be awesome.
Voiceover work would be awesome. I mean, we could, you know,
we're open to it.
You, Michael, we do it. Men, women, we got Melissa, we got, you know, but I'm just watching the show and I'm going, because sometimes, you know, like, sometimes it's a little bit like, you know, they have, believe it or not, they have sex scenes and we don't need, like, like, that type of thing. Like, you know, I mean, you could just dub that in anyway. But, you know, when they're fighting and arguing and stuff like that, it really looks like...
It's a whole thing.
It really is.
It's a great documentary. I know that voice, it's called. And you can you learn about what voiceover actors have to do and everything, from dubbing to shows to video games. The guy that you got his autograph.
John DiMaggio.
DiMaggio is big in it. It's a really interesting, like, because I love, like, this guy, Marcus LaMarche, but there's Phil Lamar. You know, there's so many great voiceover.
Oh, yeah.
But you have to do it. Like, you don't realize that, like, you have to go, in so many different ways to get the different ways it's done.
Yeah, because it's a big shot that you're getting hit with, or you're getting shot by, a punch, as opposed to getting shot, as opposed to getting knocked down. And, like, I'm sure it's got to be a difficult thing to get it all worked and synced up. But I was just thinking, that would be a cool job, though. You know, like, you're watching, I guess you first have to watch it and then say, then get into the character and however you're doing it, whatever. But that's for another time. Okay. So we won't be doing a podcast next week because Zach is going to Washington.
Yeah.
The next one will probably be the draft. We'll have to maybe do it a couple of days before.
And the beginning of playoffs, right?
Playoffs start
April 20th.
So we'll be making our predictions. Yeah. We know the first round. Yeah. I think this is a predominantly Ranger group here.
Oh, you think?
But I won't make, like I did pick, I won't pick the Rangers because every team that I picked, they don't get there. So I'm just going to stay back and not pick anything, but we'll be back in 2 weeks with a big NHL, NFL, and Washington trip. So thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks.